Father and Son. Nor was there anything Clymene could say to make Phaeton change his mind. She watched in an agony of distress as he gathered up his few belongings. "Look up, and you'll see me," he said, kissing her farewell. "I'll wave as I ride by." The Palace of the Sun lay, of course, due east, in fact as far east as India. How Phaeton got there isn't agreed upon. I have read that magical sun hawks told Apollo of the boy's slow struggle from mainland Greece across Mesopotamia and Persia, and that the god instructed these splendid birds to bear him up and fly him the rest of the way. However Phaeton got there, he arrived at night, and immediately was summoned to the throne room of the palace, where Apollo sat, robed in purple, in the glimmer that gleamed from the gold, silver, and jewels which decorated the chamber. The throne he sat in, that alone, was studded with more than 10,000 rubies and emeralds. The youth fell to his knees, quite overpowered by the magnificence of the palace, the dazzle of the gemstones, and above all, by the radiant glory of his father, the god. "So, you are Clymene's boy, are you? Stand up. Let's have a look at you. Yes, I can see that you might be the fruit of my loins. You have the cast of countenance, the colouring. I'm told you travelled a long way to be here. Why?" The question was blunt, and Phaeton found himself a little flustered. He managed to stammer out some words about Epiphus and the other boys, and was painfully aware that he sounded more like a spoiled child than the proud son of an Olympian. "Yes, yes, very mean, very disrespectful. And where do I come in?" "All my life," said Phaeton, burning with the pride and resentment that had smouldered inside him for so very long. "All my life, my mother has told me about great and glorious Apollo, the golden god, my shining, perfect father. But you've never visited us. You've never invited us anywhere. You've never even acknowledged me." "Well, yes, I'm sorry about that. Remiss of me. I've been a terrible father. I wish I could make it up to you." Apollo mouthed the words that absent fathers mouth everywhere and every day, but his mind was really on horses, music, drink, anything but this tedious, sulky, and complaining child. "If you could just grant me one wish, that's all. Of course, name it." "Really? You mean it?" "Of course. You swear you'll grant it?" "I swear," said Apollo, amused by the boy's extreme earnestness. "I swear by my lyre. I swear by the cold flowing waters of the Styx herself. Name it, I say." "I want to drive your horses." "My horses?" said Apollo, not quite understanding. "Drive them? What do you mean?"
"I want to steer the sun chariot across the sky, tomorrow."
"Oh, no," said Apollo, a smile spreading across his face. "No, no, no. Don't be silly. No one can do that."
"You promised,
Phaeton." "Phaeton, it's brave and splendid even to dream of doing such a thing. But no one, no one drives those animals but me."
"You swore by the Styx. Zeus himself couldn't control them. They are the strongest, wildest, most headstrong and unmanageable stallions ever born. They answer to my touch and mine alone. No, no, you can't ask such a thing."
"I have asked it, and you have sworn."
"Phaeton!"
The other 11 gods would have been astonished to hear such a pleading, desperate note in Apollo's voice.
"I beg of you, anything else, gold, food, power, knowledge, love, you name it, It's yours in perpetuity, but not this. Never this. I have asked and you have sworn, the stubborn youth replied.
Apollo bowed his golden head and cursed inwardly. Oh, those gods and their quick tongues! Oh, those mortals and their foolish dreams! Will either ever learn?
Right, let's go and meet them then, but know this, Apollo said as they neared the stables and the horsey smell grew stronger and sharper in Phaeton's nostrils. You can change your mind at any time. I won't think any the less of you, frankly. I'll think a great deal the more of you. At their approach, the four stallions, white with golden manes, stamped and shifted in their stalls.
Hey, Parois!
Whoa there, Phlegon! Hush now, Eos! Quietly, Aethon! Apollo called to each in turn. All right, come forward, boy. Let them get to know you.
Phaeton had never seen such beautiful horses. Their eyes flashed gold, and their hoofs struck sparks on the flagstones. He was filled with awe, but felt, too, a sudden stab of fear, which he tried to play off as thrilled anticipation. Lined up before the massive gates of dawn was a golden quadriga, the great chariot to which the four stallions would soon be harnessed. A quiet female figure in saffron robes hurried past. Phaeton caught from her a fragrance which he could not name but which made him dizzy with delight.
That was Eos, said Apollo. It will soon be time for her to open the gates.
Phaeton knew all about Eos, the goddess of the dawn. She was known as Rhododactylos, the rosy-fingered one, admired everywhere for her sweetness and soft beauty. As he helped his father walk the stallions forward and into position at the head of the chariot, Phaeton suddenly felt himself pushed roughly aside.
"What is this mortal doing?"
A huge figure, dressed in shining buff leather armour, had taken the bridle of all four horses at once and was leading them forward.
Helios, there you are, said Apollo. This is Phaeton, my son, Phaeton. So?
Phaeton knew that Helios was the brother of Eos and the moon goddess Selene, and assisted Apollo in his daily duties with the chariot. Apollo seemed slightly awkward in the Titan's presence.
Well, the thing is, Phaeton will be driving the chariot today.
Excuse me?
Well, he might as well learn now, don't you think?
You are joking.
I sort of promised.
Well, sort of unpromised, then.
Helios, I can't. You know I can't.
Helios stamped his foot and gave a roar that caused the horses to rear and whinny.
You've never once let me drive, Apollo. Never. How many times have I asked and how many times have you told me I'm not ready? And now you let this shrimp take the reins?
Helios, you will do as you're told, said Apollo. I have spoken, and so I have spoken.
Apollo took the four leather traces from Helios and lifted Phaeton up and onto the seat of the chariot. Helios gave a shout of laughter as he saw the youth slide back and forth.
He rolls in it like a little pea,
he said with a surprisingly high-pitched giggle.
He'll be fine. Now, Phaeton,
these reins, they are your lines of communication with the horses. They know the way. They run this course every day. But you must show them that you are their master. You understand? Phaeton nodded eagerly. Something of his nervous excitement and Helios's fury seemed to have been picked up by the horses, who bucked and snorted restlessly. The most important thing, continued Apollo, is to fly neither too high nor too low, a middle course between the sky and the earth, yes? Again, Phaeton nodded. Oh, I nearly forgot. Hold out your hands. Apollo took a jar and poured oil from it into Phaeton's outstretched palms. Anoint yourself in that all over. It will protect you from the heat and light generated by the stallions as they gallop through the air. The earth below will be warmed and lit as you go, so keep a straight line westward towards the Garden of the Hesperides. It's a 12-hour drive. Be steady. Remember, the horses know. Call them by name. Eos and Ethon up front, Pirois and Phlegon behind. As Apollo said their names, Phaeton saw their ears prick up. But it's not too late, boy. You've seen them, you've handled them. I'll give you gold sculptures of them cast by Hephaestus to take home. That should satisfy your school friends. Another high-pitched titter from Helios sent a flush to Phaeton's cheek. No, he said stiffly. You gave a promise, and so did I.